are listening to Beyond Migraine, a six-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland, brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The views, information or opinions expressed during the Beyond Migraine podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of the Migraine Association of Ireland or Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This podcast is supported by funding from Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Please note, any comments posted are not being monitored by Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Reporting of suspected adverse reactions is important. It allows continued monitoring of the benefit-risk balance of the medicinal product. To ensure correct adverse event reporting, healthcare professionals and patients are encouraged to use their National Competent Authority reporting scheme. Or you can also report via tevafarm.com/contact us. Exercise and migraines. What helps and what hurts? For this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Tony Cascarino, former international soccer player for Ireland, who is a migraine sufferer. Julie Sugru is a clinical specialist physiotherapist in ULHG, the University of Limerick Hospital Group. And Dr. Edward O'Sullivan is the director of the Cork Migraine Headache Clinic. So to start off, Eddie, I'm going to go to you first. And just to kind of take it back to basics, you know, what is happening when somebody is suffering from a migraine attack and why does exercise trigger it sometimes?
Well, migraine is a neurological disorder that affects 10 to 12% of the population. And about 20% of those patients get the typical, what we call visual aura symptoms, which patients are very familiar with, consisting of zigzag lines, flashing lights, blurred vision, which lasts for 15 to 20 minutes, and then is followed by a headache, or they may get other aura symptoms such as numbness, pins and needles, difficulty with speech. And these symptoms themselves can be disabling, particularly for sports people if they occurred while they're in sporting activity. And of course, what causes this is that we know it's a neurological condition. We know that there are what we call chemicals released from the brain, which causes changes in blood flow and changes in the sensitive pathways, giving rise to then to the next part of a migraine attack, which is the, you know, the debilitating, throbbing, pounding headache, which is frequently one-sided. People would score it very high. It can be accompanied by other symptoms such as nausea. Many of these patients have vomiting, and then they have an intolerance to light and sound. The severity of these symptoms, of course, make a migraine attack incapacitating for individuals, and in that the impact is such that they have to lie down in a quiet, dark room. Many patients, of course, will have these migraine attacks triggered by trigger factors, one of which, of course, is exercise, which is the focus for today.
And what is happening there? Why are some people triggered? Because not all migraine sufferers are triggered by exercise. So what is happening there? Do we know? Or?
Well, we don't know specifically what's happening, but we do know that, you know, individuals have a threshold for a migraine attack, and that's what brings it on. You know, for women, for example, it can be around the time of the menstrual cycle, just before it. For other patients, it could be dietary factors. And for others, again, it can be, let's say, alcohol. But in the case of exercise, it's predominantly a number, I would say, first of all, it's vigorous exercise. So it's the degree of effort, probably proportional to degree of fitness as well. But vigorous exercise, you know, makes you reach that threshold, and then you get the cascade of symptoms then which emerge. I think certain types of exercise will make individuals more susceptible to a migraine attack. And I would say anaerobic exercise, by the way, which maybe if you could do a lot of breath holding, you know, weightlifting, working out in the gym, I think those kind of exercises will make you more vulnerable to a migraine attack than other forms, or than mild to moderate exercise. And of course, high performance athleticism, you know, when you're making your maximum effort during exercise, will trigger migraine attacks in patients who have exercise as a trigger. And of course, that can be a very challenging thing for a high performance athlete, and does create problems for that individual.
Yeah, and that's very much the situation, Tony, that you were faced with at certain stages in your career. Can you tell us a little bit about your migraines? When did you get your first attack, Tony? Do you remember that? Or
yeah, 19, about 19 years old. Is when I actually first signed for Gillingham, which was my first club. I had an episode. I'd experienced it a little bit, not myself, but from my sister, and also my mum, not severe as my sister, but I was travelling down to Gillingham and my eyes started to flicker, feel that submerging underwater experience, and stopped the car at a petrol station and opened the door and was sick. Then you realise all you want to do is close everything off. And I sat in the petrol station for what I thought was about an hour, and I managed to get to sleep, and I woke up about 4 hours later.
Wow.
Didn't feel great. One side of my head was completely banging. And that was only right. I'd only signed for Gillingham about a month. And it stayed with me, though, Debbie, if I'm brutally honest, because I hid it. I'd never got it on international duty. I had it after one really bad bout. Was when we played Spain at home and we beat them at the Lansdowne, which is the Aviva now. We beat Spain and I got it on the day after the game, and it was a very draining game, physical, and talking with interest and listening and of how, you know, I felt after that game. And I didn't go training the next day because, like always, you once you get used to it, this is years down the line, you sort of know the procedure of where you head to and what you do, and everyone has to get out of your way. It's not only affects you, it affects people around you. But I kept it very low-key because there is a stigma of being at a football club and also not letting it out there. So I kept it very low-key. I didn't let clubs know. Obviously, because you go to sign to a club and you have a big transfer. I left Gillingham to go to Millwall and they paid quite a lot of money for me. And I'm not telling them that I suffered from migraines every now and again, even though it wasn't an every once in a week occurrence. It could easily be one in every 2 to 3 months at that time.
And was it taken seriously, like, you know, by your managers and by the coaches? Because oftentimes with, particularly with men, it's seen as like a female problem, or that, you know, people are, I think all migraine sufferers, maybe people think we're exaggerating, you know, our symptoms as well. Did you find that there was that understanding?
I think once they saw you and they saw the condition you were in and what you were going through, I think it was quite obvious that you were not just suffering a headache. It was far worse than that and far more severe. And when you're in it and you're in pain and you just want to sleep and try and get everything, the outside world shut off from what you're experiencing, you will tend to not really care whatever people think at the time, because all you want to do is get out of what the situation you're in. And that is to hopefully sleep it off. I was sick when I was coming back when I was going to Gillingham Football Club, where I had a real bad bout of sickness at that particular time. Wasn't every time, but it happened. So you just wanted to come out of it. It's not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, and during Italia 90, so obviously it was like a period of euphoria for everybody in Ireland, but I would also imagine the absolute stress and pressure of Italia 90 as a player. Did you find that? What triggered your migraines? Did you get to the bottom of that? And was stress a factor as well?
Well, obviously it's sort of trial and error, isn't it? Is it dietary? Is it caffeine? Is it chocolate? So you go for all these procedures. And I generally, if I'm brutally honest, I found stress was the biggest effect on me. You know, I've had situations where I'm working now, and Mrs. might say, you know, be careful, slow down, you're doing way too much, you're going to get a migraine. And then suddenly I'm doing all this work and 2 days later I'm sitting in my chair, my eyes start to go, because obviously that's my first sign. And I get the flicker and I get the feeling of I know it's coming. And yet I'm in a relaxed situation, but I've stressed all week. So I totally felt it was a stress-related illness for me. More than, you know, I didn't ever feel I'd ate too much of this or drunk this. And it was always far more stress related. And most sportsmen, there isn't a lot of stress before the game. There's nerves, there's concerns of, you know, what's confronting you. Afterwards, it can be quite stressy because there's a massive come down. And physically, it's very, very draining on you. And I think sometimes certainly for me, I can feel more stress after games than before them.
Julie, that's interesting there what Tony was saying, that he felt that in that kind of high pressure environment, when, you know, leading up to the match, the day of the match, that that actually wasn't when he suffered a migraine attack. It was, you know, the days after that. And you hear that quite commonly amongst some migraine sufferers.
Yeah, absolutely. So common, particularly when people are talking about sport as a trigger, but also when people are talking about any stressful scenario in life as their main trigger. Sometimes they get through it with high adrenaline, and then it's when the moment has passed or the game has passed, and that's when their migraine comes in then. And it's interesting that as well as migraine having its own stigma attached to it and people often not wanting to talk publicly about it, people often feel that there's a stigma related to admitting that stress is a huge trigger. And I suppose people can hide behind it when it's not the stressful moment that causes the migraine itself. It comes in afterwards. So they're able to say on that particular day, they're not stressed. So therefore stress isn't relevant, but it so commonly is.
And Eddie, just to go back to you. So if people suffer from migraine and they feel it's triggered by exercise, so is there anything you can do to prepare?
I think the key to it, first of all, I think, you know, when exercise is a specific trigger, it can be a combination of things. And of course, what exercise is doing is actually triggering your you know, your adrenaline surge and your ability to respond and perform. And of course, it's not the ability to cope that triggers the migraine attack. It's the physiological effects of the stress and the exercise. Therefore, what we do recommend is preparation. And I think for athletes, we talk about diet, and all athletes are very concerned about their diet. And diet is very important in terms of also preventing attacks when exercise is a potential trigger. And we always recommend in the hours before exercise in terms of training and matches to take slow release carbohydrates. And that helps you to maintain your blood sugar levels so that, you don't, your drugs, your blood sugar sugars aren't dropping, and that you need a physiological response then to maintain blood sugars, where you've got a maintenance slow release carbohydrates, and that lowers the stress axis curve. There are other things that are important as well in terms of preparing for exercise, and that's taking fluids before, during and after exercise. And of course, there are there are other things that contribute alongside the exercise. If you're playing a game on a hot sunny day, you know, down in Orlando in Mexico in a World Cup match, it's not so easy to perform at that heat, and you will be very vulnerable to get a migraine attack with a combination of exercise, heat and dehydration.
And was that a problem for you, Tony? Did you feel that the heat or dehydration could have triggered migraines in you?
Well, we were always taught in football, you know, with at least 2 bottles of water a day, so you're hydrating all the time in sport. So yeah, it was a necessity that you do that. I played in Turkey once when I didn't feel great and felt very dehydrated after the game, but I didn't get triggered with a migraine. I didn't trigger it off, but I felt that it was going to come. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's a really strange one because, look, I'm in a special environment. Being at a football club or being an international player, if you've got anything that's an issue, an ailment, you will get dealt with pretty quickly. Or help. Sometimes they can't solve the problem, but they can certainly help you through it and afterwards. So, I mean, I was in a privileged position. If you play for top football clubs, you know, the doctor at the football club will help you if he knows you've got an issue. So being in that privileged position certainly helped you deal with the issues of migraine far easier than, you know, someone who was probably sitting at home and having these issues. They speak to their doctor and that's about it. We had a doctor at Beck and Call. You know, 24/7.
So at the outset of this episode, I mentioned that there's kind of two aspects to exercise. There's migraines that are triggered by exercise. And there's also the fact that exercise can be beneficial to people who suffer from migraine. And Julie, I just wanted to go to you as well, because you are a physiotherapist. And I think when people initially think of treatment for migraine, they don't think about physiotherapy within that, you know, discipline. And what is the role of physiotherapy in the treatment of migraine?
Yeah, so there's physiotherapists involved in most multidisciplinary team headache clinics internationally. So one of the main roles will be around advice of exercise, treatment of neck pain and neck dysfunction, And then the general holistic care around trigger management and, you know, guiding a person through their non-medical options, really.
So there can be like a physical reason why some people are getting migraines, not always in everybody's case. So is there, can there be a dysfunction or something there that might be triggering, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it's, I think it's important just to note that the neck can be a trigger, but not the reason. The reason is the neurological condition that Eddie outlined. Migraine is migraine. But sometimes the neck pain can be a trigger. And it's really because the nerves from the upper part of the neck join into the same area of the lower part of the brain as nerves that, that serve the head and face. So that pain from migraine can often involve neck pain, but neck pain can also trigger a migraine.
Right, okay. And are there specific treatments that you would do as a physiotherapist for people with migraine to relieve that area?
The most evidence-based approach would be to do a combination of exercise and hands-on. Now, that exercise relation to just neck pain is very specific exercise around strengthening the neck, whereas general exercise then is another piece of what physiotherapy adds to the mix. So advising people around what level of exercise they need to get to have the protective benefit of it. So aerobic exercise is the most researched piece of preventative exercise therapy. And the suggestion is to move upwards towards the WHO guidelines of 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a week. And whether you do that in 5 30-minute walks or in 10-minute blocks is irrelevant once you reach that number. Different research papers have looked at people doing 40, 45 minutes of exercise, maybe 3-4 times a week, with really impressive results of exercise towards migraine, reducing migraine frequency and intensity.
Okay. And I know some people say that yoga or those more gentle forms of exercise can also be beneficial. Now, I wonder if there a stress reduction element to that as well. But would you advocate those kind of, if you're in a situation where you're suffering from chronic migraines, so you might have migraine every day and you're just not in a place where you feel that, you know, you can get out and exercise, maybe just some gentle yoga and or Pilates or something. Would you recommend that?
Absolutely. Yoga is probably very underutilized as a exercise approach that has huge benefits. So not just the physical fitness and movement and flexibility that comes from it, but the other part of the yoga with the relaxation and that mindfulness piece that's often linked to it, to give the whole body just a little bit of a downtime.
And if people are suffering from migraine and they're listening to this, would you recommend they visit a physiotherapist as well, just as part of their approach to seeing, you know, not necessarily what the causes are, but just as, you know, part of their treatment plan?
Yeah. So certainly if they thought that their neck was a trigger, it's a good idea to meet with a physiotherapist. If they want to just start exercising, there's so many options that they could do. So, and a chartered physiotherapist can help them if they're really stuck on where to start and how to gradually build up in intensity to improve fitness. But most people would be very well able to do, for example, a walking program without a professional guiding them. But if, for example, like you said, they can't do that and they're looking at other options, really good idea.
Okay. Now there's one issue in relation to migraine, and that's the hereditary nature. And Tony, your mother suffered from migraine, did she?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting there, just listening, and my mum suffered from pleurisy as well, which is obviously around the neck and as issues, yes, but she had migraines quite regularly.
And what's your memory of that as a child like?
I don't remember mum laying in bed and shutting off the curtains. It happened to her. I think pleurisy was one of the worst things she could have got because I don't know, it kicked in, but it felt that once she got pleurisy, her headaches and her migraine, because they became far more intense. And she was, you know, many a time I'd pick up the phone and I'd speak to her other half and say, could speak to mum, our mum's in bed, she's not feeling great, she's having a bit of a migraine bout, you know. So I knew about that, and that would be a little bit too common for my liking. And then, of course, there was my sister. My
okay.
sister probably had it the worst of all three of us. And she has it more regularly. And whether it's hormonal or not, it does happen. And she is not for six, but she tends to, my sister tends to get it when there's an event, like a 30th birthday, or, you know, she seems to get very stressy around that periods of something special that's going to happen. She actually worries about getting a migraine if she can turn up on the day. So it's a concern. And I guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, 2 days before that event is happening, she's had a migraine. Normally okay for the night, but she would probably, I would say, is the worst of the three of us, certainly by a bit of a distance, really.
Yeah, and I think that's common for people that get migraines as well. I do that myself, so I have a certain migraine period where I will not book in a holiday, or if I get an invitation to something, I'm kind of like, oh God. Like if you get an invitation to a wedding or something, that you would almost like organize your life around it. To and that's part of self-management, I suppose, really.
As you said, Debbie, and it affects everybody around. It affects her children, it affects my children growing up, your other half. It affects people around you, which you have concerns. They deal with it. You don't like them having to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a big thing, isn't it? Well, the effect on, you know, partner relationships and the effect on children as well. And sometimes you just have to leave family events. Like we all know that once you get one of them, there's no way you're going to sit through a family event for an hour. And Eddie, what about that hereditary aspect of migraine? Do we understand that? Or
I mean, there's certainly some forms of migraine and that have a very strong definitive mode of inheritance, you know, and that's in particular in relation to hemiplegic migraine, where it's an autosomal dominant, where if one of your parents has it, then you've got at least a 50% chance of inheriting the disorder.
And what's a hemiplegic migraine, just to explain that to people?
Hemiplegic migraine is those patients who, along with the traditional aura symptoms of the visual flashing lights, zigzag lines, numbness, pins and needles, difficulty with speech, they also get a definite weakness going down usually one side of their body involving their arms and legs. So they actually experience loss of power, stroke-like symptoms, and often it needs to be fully investigated before that diagnosis of hemiplegic migraine is given. But the essence of it is got all those aura symptoms plus what we call motor symptoms, which is loss of power and weakness down one side of the body in particular. And if you have that, then there is a condition called familial hemiplegic migraine, where if one of your parents have it, you've got a 50% chance of getting the condition in the children. Now, in terms of, like, say, the migraine that Tony has, or migraine without aura, there is still a very strong genetic component to that, but it's unknown exactly what kind of genetic factors are responsible for that. But it would be a combination then of environmental factors. So it's not just all an inherited condition, you know, environmental factors will also be contributing to the factors to why that individual experiences migraine.
And one of the key tools in terms of coming to terms with your migraines or trying to manage them, Eddie, is the migraine diary, or tracking your migraines. Can you explain, you know, why that's so important from a GP perspective?
Well, it's a recurrent headache disorder by definition. So, you know, patients may get one attack a week. Tony was outlining, I think, listening to him, that he would get an attack every few weeks or every few months. So that's episodic, but, you know, it can vary over time. You can get periods of remission, but there's also a group of patients where it can be a progressive disorder, where it goes from, let's say, once a week or once a fortnight to a number of days per week. And about 10% of migraine patients have what we call chronic migraine, where you've got more than 15 headache days per month, most of which have migrainous features. So when you keep, and then you can move in terms of the frequency of your headaches, you know, from X number of days per month to less or more, unless you're monitoring that, you won't have a clear picture of how the individual is doing. And of course, more importantly, in terms of treatment options that you prescribe, whether they're preventative drugs or acute drugs or advice and trigger factors, unless you're keeping a good headache diary, you won't be able to objectively, accurately, get a good insight into how that individual is doing in terms of the migraine. Or at least, let's say, with a headache diary, you get a far better insight into how they're doing when you see them at follow-up appointments. It also empowers the patient, actually, to kind of adhere and comply with advice around the management of their migraine as well.
Yeah, it is very important. And there's diaries available from the Migraine Association of Ireland, and there are numerous apps online that you can use as well. Julie, I just wanted to talk to you. I know that Eddie was mentioning hemiplegic migraine there, and I just wanted to talk to you about, there's a particular type of migraine that I know physiotherapy is very involved in, vestibular migraine. And I think people don't really understand that, but it's migraine without a headache effectively.
Yeah, so vestibular migraine, the main symptom, I suppose, will be dizziness. Now, there is some school of thought that maybe vestibular type rehabilitation would help to bring patients back to more normal vestibular functioning if they've gone through a few bouts of vestibular migraine or they have some chronic symptoms. And certainly patients have reported that they feel better. But the unfortunate thing is then once they get another vestibular migraine attack, it seems to take them right back and they need to repeatedly do the exercises again. So, they present as almost as if they have an inner ear dysfunction.
Right, dizziness and almost like seasickness or something like that, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, not really pure vertigo, a dizziness that feels like they've just come off a boat and that they haven't got their sea legs yet. Yeah, just this difficulty often associated with, travel sickness and motion sickness. But the dizziness itself is a major feature of the migraine. But lots of people with standard migraine get dizziness as well. So there's a spectrum rather than a clean line.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. And I think throughout this series, we'll say it here and we'll say it again, is that everybody's migraine is different. And no two people have exactly the same migraine with the exact same triggers and the exact same symptoms. So that's why it's really important to educate yourself and to inform yourself and to get to the bottom of your own migraines, really.
And I think getting to the bottom of it, Debbie, is really hard because usually people need a cumulative effect of a number of different triggers, often before they get a migraine attack. So one thing that they think is a trigger this week might confuse them because last month it wasn't. So when they're keeping their diary, it's rarely just one trigger that sets off a migraine attack. It's usually a accumulation. So for particular with females, if it's hormonal changes, it might not be premenstrual every month. It might be premenstrual if they haven't slept well, or if they're not hydrated, or if they haven't been exercising, or they've been through a stressful period. And similarly with sport, probably Tony found that's why it wasn't every time that he played a high performance game. There's other cumulative triggers around it that were the difference.
You wouldn't be able to play sport. You know, you just couldn't. You were suffering regularly because it would affect your training, it would affect your preparation, and also playing. You know, that would just be too high of a level. 3 years ago, this July, I had a brain tumour removed, which was benign. So very fortunate there. My first question to the surgeon, the neurosurgeon, was, I get migraines. Will this increase or will it be more severe? And he made no correlation between the two. He said, no, there shouldn't be any difference at all. This is another issue completely. Luckily, I feel as good as I've been felt for years. And I totally agree with the sort of exercise we're talking about because I feel moderate exercise for me, even though high-level sport can be very competitive and you drive you. You know, sportsmen like myself tend to drive themselves and push themselves harder than you should do at times, especially you, because that edge is in you. So I've dealt with that. I'm fine. And I'm just really interested to hear other, you know, versions of other people's difficulties in handling, which is a very difficult illness to deal with.
Did it affect your migraines in the sense that was there any difference in your migraines after the operation? I know it's not connected.
I certainly haven't had as many. In the last few years, the last couple of years have been as good as it's been for, nearly coming up to 40 years.
Yeah, I can understand that because I think, and this is important to address with you, Eddie, as well, is this whole issue because I think you always have that fear because sometimes migraine attacks are so bad, like you literally think there is something going on there. But I think it's very important to because yours was unrelated to your migraines, your tumour, wasn't it? It wasn't connected in any way to them.
No, not connected. Oh, but you're right. Yeah. It's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, yeah. And I think everybody thinks that. But I think, Eddie, is that actually most people that you present in A&E, it ends up being something like migraine, a headache, isn't it? There's only a small percentage who there ever is an underlying condition.
Oh, yeah, it's very rare in the sense it would be well less than 1% who present with recurrent headaches will have a brain tumor. And often, you know, their brain tumors will present with other symptoms. But obviously, I Tony's correct. And you know, people who do present, you know, with debilitating severe headaches, you know, need to have these headaches often investigated for the potential for secondary causes, which in themselves are rare but important things to consider and rule out.
Yeah. And Tony, how are your migraines now? Like, how do you manage them? Or are they very rare now that you get them? Or
rarer, I would say a couple of years. I would have always said between 2 to 3 months before. Now it's probably half of, right, you know, two a year. And you sort of, you know, you sort of get to used to knowing the procedure, whether it's by a medicine that prepares yourself before, and just get to my bed wherever I am.
Yeah.
My bed, and I'm shutting off that light. I'm sensitive, as you know, to light when this starts, and every little sign I want to be closed off and just shut in, and I know I'll be okay and I'll come out of it, whether it's 6 hours or 12 hours later.
And Tony, do any of your children suffer from migraine? Actually, I meant to ask you.
No, not to any noticeable level. No, I wouldn't say any of them. I've had that conversation, yeah, obviously. Yeah. My one's 13, never had an issue. My other boy's 28. They're the two oldest. And I've got a couple of younger ones. But no, I've never had an issue with any of my children. Never had that. Well, saying that, my stepdaughter, who's actually obviously not connected biologically, she does get bad bouts of headaches, but not migraine. Oh, right.
Maybe they're lucky they dodged the migraine bullet.
For me, I think.
So, Eddie, if people suffer a migraine attack while they're exercising, while they're out walking, while they're in the middle of, you know, a HIIT training or a circuit training or a match, you know, what should they do? Should they just keep exercising through it, or do you have any advice there?
Well, I think this brings us back then, of course, to their ability to manage an individual attack when it occurs, because we know the impact of the attack is disabling. Patients aren't able to function. But do they have something in their armamentarium to be able to manage an attack in terms, which really will come down to medication at this point. You know, what do you take when you get a migraine attack? The first thing we say is that irrespective of what you take, you need to take it as early as possible after the onset of the symptoms, particularly the headache, because if you delay taking any medication for your headache side of the migraine, then it's less likely to work. Therefore, you know, because it's a recurrent disorder, people will have insight into know what works for them. So if they're in danger of getting a migraine attack, that's why, you know, we tell patients, you know, to carry their medication with them, you know, particularly wherever they are traveling. Now, I'm not saying you need to carry it around your pocket if you're exercising, but you do need to know where your medication is so that you can take it as promptly as possible in the hopes that it will, what we call, abort an attack so that you get relief of your symptoms. You were looking for meaningful relief from any acute therapy within 2 hours of taking your medication, and at worst 4 hours.
So don't exercise through it. Is that the advice then? Or?
Well, I think a very important concept of a migraine attack, it's never a mind game. You know, migraine will not be pushed to the back of your head. If you're experiencing a migraine attack, it's going to disable you to the point where you can't function. You will never conquer it. It's not a strength of wills. You know, it's about what can I do to manage it in terms of taking effective treatment. If I need to stop, as Tony pointed out, you know, he heads to his room and lies down and waits for it to go. Ideally, we'd like patients to be able to take something that's effective so that they are able to continue functioning, not losing time, you know, out of work, or in this case, you know, having to give away the day from exercising. It is important to know what's effective for you as an individual. It's a recurrent condition, and to have it nearby.
And Tony, do you agree with that advice? I mean, I know you said earlier that trying to get through it is an impossibility.
Yeah, I have certain rules that if I go for a walk, I try to keep in a radius of 10 minutes from my home, because whatever way I'm walking, 10 minutes away is as far as I am away. So if I did have a bout, I can get back pretty quickly. I always carry water, just because I don't ever want to be dehydrated, because I found that was a bit of an issue for me at times as well. It would bring on that feeling, that submerging feeling, if it started to flicker my eyes and that blurriness. So, yeah, there were certain things I would do. Certainly carrying medication would be, for me, one of the major things that you should do, because it's as quick as you can. The time isn't on your side when you get a migraine. It really isn't.
And so do you feel that you don't have specific triggers that you identified, but that you have a plan?
I have a plan to prevent it. I mean, the trigger was always more stress for me.
Okay.
It was always based around stress. And like I said earlier, it wasn't around football stress, or it could be the stress of life in general, running around doing stuff, and then I get told off for doing too much running around because you're going to get a migraine if you don't stop. And inevitably, I didn't. And then 2 days later, I would. When I was felt more relaxed than I should have been. That was a strange concept for me.
Yeah, and I don't know. So obviously you're not playing at international football level anymore. So I don't know what your own exercise regime is. Do you still exercise regularly, or do you do any kind of HIIT training or any of that kind of stuff? And do you still get triggered? Does it still trigger migraines? Or,
well, I didn't particularly like running, Debbie. And when I stopped getting paid to run, I really didn't want to run. I walk a lot. I do this morning I've done an hour and a half walk. I do that probably five times a week, because weekends I'm full on with football. But yes, I try to exercise. I can't run because of my knee, from 18 years of wear and tear of playing football, three cartilage operations. I can't go and run, especially on hard surfaces. And you can't get near a gym, obviously, in the last year. So I try to do, I'm very conscious of my diet as well. I don't drink much alcohol.
It's a different era.
Exactly.
And yeah. Eddie, so if people are listening in, do you have any top tips in terms of exercise and migraine? So, Tony's talking there about, the fact that he can't run, but that walking is beneficial for him. So, how should people be approaching this? Because, as I said before, there's migraines triggered by exercise, but then there's also the fact that exercise is proven to be very beneficial to people with migraine.
Yeah, I think mild to moderate exercise is excellent advice for numerous health conditions. And migraine is one of those, and particularly for patients who've got, the higher end, high frequency, or tending towards chronic migraine, which is more than 15 headache days a month. Some of these patients then would have what we call comorbid conditions, such as anxiety, mood disorder, and things along those lines. So the issue around mild to moderate exercise, of course, it's not just exercise for the sake of it. There's a clear understanding as to why the role of exercise benefits patients with high frequency migraines. And that's because there's a lot of neurotransmitter released during exercise, particularly around dopamine, noradrenergic and serotonergic mechanisms, all of which are implicated in migraine attacks as well. So these neurochemical releases, create a protective kind of moat around your threshold for migraine, and in itself can bring about a reduction in the frequency of which your migraine attacks occur. In the same way as a preventative drug, fulfills that role as well. Exercise, I think, is probably the single most important non-drug approach to the management of high frequency episodic migraine.
And Julie, from your point of view, what are your top tips for people in terms of the types of exercises? What's the most beneficial that you see in your clinics as well for people? Do you have any advice to the listeners?
I think the most important way to choose exercise is something that's accessible to you and that you enjoy. That they're the most important thing.
And that you're going to stick to, basically.
Like I said earlier, when research is done on it, they often look at walking programs or stationary bikes because they're easy to control in a research program. So that's what we have the strongest evidence for. But the most important thing is that somebody sticks to it, enjoys it, and if they have a really low level of baseline fitness, that they start low. So I mentioned the guidelines earlier, working up towards, for example, 150 minutes of aerobic exercise in a week. But somebody can start with a 5-minute walk. It can take you many weeks and months to get up to a level of exercise where you're getting the benefits of it, and that's okay. So just start is the other piece of advice. And Eddie mentioned moderate exercise, and I think it's just important to explain to people what moderate exercise is. So it would be a nice way of thinking of it, an informal way of thinking about it, is a talk test. So if I'm walking or jogging in a moderate way today, I should be able to carry on a conversation while I'm doing it. So the person I'm talking to will know I'm exercising. I'm slightly out of breath, but I can continue to talk without any break in my words. So that's the level that we should be working at to get the beneficial side effects of exercise for migraine prevention.
And I think that's important because we all have a tendency to throw ourselves, you know, that's exactly what happened to me. I kept going to this HIIT training class once a week, and I hadn't done exercise for a while. I went to this, and every time I left that class, I had like a whopper migraine, like knocked me out for about 2 days, and I avoided that class. But I think I actually built up my fitness more moderately, like you've advised. And I went back recently before they locked down, and I didn't get that migraine. So I have to avoid that throwing yourself into it, isn't it?
Yes. And when a nice rule of thumb for progressing your fitness is to think about 10% increases. Now, obviously, like when Tony was getting paid to do sport, you have to just get you. There's no such thing as hiding behind 10% increases of fitness. There was run hard and run fast. But if I start a walking program today and my limit is 10 minutes, next week I should be aiming for 11 minutes. Sometimes people say, oh, well, that 10 minutes went very well. Next time I'll do 20 or 30 minutes. So just taking it nice and slow.
And moderately. Great advice.
Up to a place where you can do a moderate amount of exercise in so that cumulatively it adds to about 150 minutes per week. Obviously, it can be more. You could take it up to 300 minutes, or if it's more vigorous exercise, you don't have to spend as long. You get to cut the time down if it's more vigorous.
I think that's great advice for people because, as I said, if you're suffering with, and as Eddie said, often people have other issues as well, particularly if they're suffering from chronic migraine, that it can seem insurmountable to get into exercise. But the fact is, you're saying just start moderately, you know, aim for that very low level at the start. And then I think, you know, it'll become more of a habit.
So that's the aerobic part of exercise. And then what's often forgotten then is that there's huge benefits available to our body for strengthening exercises, like you would have got with your with more boot camp type regimes or Pilates, and then stretching exercises or the other benefits that yoga brings. So people can choose whatever they enjoy, wherever they get their benefit and whatever fits into their life.
You've been listening to Beyond Migraine, a 6-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland and brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland.